All right, take out your Bible and turn to 1 Samuel chapter 25. I made it as one of my objectives for this week is to plan out the rest of the year for the messages and so forth. I think I have a plan, but I haven't solidified it yet. But I think I have a plan, so I'll let you know what that is probably next week, if you don't mind. Our story today is fairly well known. I'm titling the message, Returning Evil for Good. Has that ever happened to you? You do something wonderful for somebody, and you have pure motive. It's just your good heart, and someone returns evil for that. That's what's going on. Last week we talked about the exact opposite. Returning evil for good. Good for evil. Okay? Which is what David did in our last story last week. Here's a sub-question, because you know the story about Nabal and his wife Abigail, right? We'll get to that in a moment. How I use my resources really matter that much? I know people and their dads, and they use their resources to control their children. I know people like that. I've had a few discussions with them about it. And they can't see it at all. Their kids talk to me about it. Okay? Or am I privileged to do what I want with what I earn? Is this just my stuff? I can do whatever I want with it? And we're not going to get into that big discussion today, because that's a big discussion. And is the answer to that question any different for people who are Christians? That's not the main point of this story, but it stands in the shadows as a reminder that what I have is really God's, and He desires that I use it for His glory. I am simply an earthly caretaker of what He really truly owns. God owns all this stuff. I am challenged to be a good caretaker of what God has given to me. And that's our introduction, some introductory ideas, but here's something that comes to mind. This particular story is about personalities and power that play an important role in 1 Samuel chapter 25. Personalities, it's interesting because Nabal is a really interesting guy. I would submit to you that you all know someone like this grouch. Okay? That's an easy, soft word for what this guy really is. The text is really quite declarative about what this character is. But anyways, and then of course there's David. He's going to be the future king, and he really, really, really overreacts to what happens. He gets steaming angry, which is a subtopic in our talk this morning. We'll talk about that when we get to it, okay? And we must see that what is in this personality of the future king and what it will take to change his mind. There's a bit of tension in this story, revolves around wealth. But the main point turns on how David will respond to someone who returns evil for good. Okay? That's what's really at the base of all this thing. I got six parts to this particular chapter, but I want to read the first verse and we'll just walk through the parts together. Chapter 25, verse 1. Now Samuel died, and all Israel assembled and mourned for him, and they buried him in his house at Ramah. That's the sole piece on the death of Samuel. We haven't heard about him for quite a while, have we? There it is, Samuel's death, chapter 25, verse 1. All good men and all evil men eventually die, and there are plenty who grieve over their death. Samuel was loved by many, and he is grieved and buried in his hometown. One thing that we grieve is the loss of their influence. I've been to numerous funerals, numerous. I don't know. I'm going to guess close to 100. And people's response to death is just all over the board. It just is. Some cases I knew the person. The first funeral I ever went to was for my aunt. And then they asked me to be a pallbearer. It was emotionally traumatizing for me. I couldn't believe how traumatized I was. And I really didn't know her that well. And I've heard of really good friends who have passed and are with the Lord today. But the thing that I miss the most is their influence, their wisdom, and their character. Samuel was a man, a prophet of influence. He could discern the will of God, and when he spoke, none of his words fell to the ground. That's who the man is in the story. This describes the nature of his influence and should point us to a life that is marked by wisdom and character that is distinctly of God. So let me just summarize that and we'll move on to the next section. Death is certain, but influence can be ongoing at well after death. Think about someone right now. They died, that their influence is still all over you. I have a second cousin who texted me, I don't know, 2 weeks ago and said, "Hey, Uncle Mark, I want to talk to you about your grandfather, his great-grandfather." He never met him. And all that really is the influence of my grandfather leaching down to the grandkids, the great-grandkids. I want to talk to you about him because it's a mixed bag. It really is. And I said, just give me a call and we'll talk as long as you want to talk. Because of his 22 grandkids, I probably knew him the best. Okay, I was second oldest and I knew him the best. Also, Samuel was God's voice for accountability in the life of Israel's first king. And when he died, Saul's accountability did not die. Someone would still hold Saul accountable. Let's move on to verses 2 through 13. Let's read those. Verse 2. Then Saul took 3,000 chosen men out of Israel and went to seek David and his men in front of, that's chapter 24, that's the wrong verse. Verse 2. There was a man in Moab whose business was in Carmel. The man was very rich. He had 3,000 sheep and 1,000 goats. He was shearing his sheep in Carmel. Now the name of the man was Nabal, and his name of his wife, Abigail. The woman was discerning and beautiful, but the man was harsh and badly behaved. He was a Calebite. David heard in the wilderness that Nabal was shearing his sheep. So David sent 10 young men, and David said to the young men, "Go up to Carmel and go to Nabal and greet him in my name, and thus you shall greet him. Peace be to you, and peace be to your house, and peace be to all that you have. I hear that you have shearers. Now your shepherds have been with us, and we did them no harm, and they missed nothing all the time that they were in Carmel. Ask your young men, and they will tell you. Therefore let my young men find favor in your eyes, for we come on a feast day. Please give whatever you have at hand to your servants and to your son David." When David's young men came, they said to all this to Nabal in the name of David, and then they waited. And Nabal answered David's servants, "Who is David, who is the son of Jesse? There are many servants these days who are breaking away from their masters. Shall I take my bread and my water and my meat that I have killed from my shearers and give it to the men who come from I don't know where?" So David's young men turned away and came back and told him all of this. And David said to his men, "Every man strap on his sword." And every man of them strapped on his sword. David also strapped on his sword, and about 400 men went up with David, while 200 remained with the baggage. Foolish people. How many foolish people are in the story? At least two. Nabal's really foolish, just foolish. And so is David's response to what Nabal did. Two different foolish people. Nabal probably much older and David much younger. We get the sense that Nabal was a foolish man because he was ungrateful for the benefit that his hired servants enjoyed at the hands of David's men. Being grateful is an important element of good, upright relationships. Isn't that important in this season of the year? Gratefulness. This is at the heart of being a child of God, being a young person, being an adult. Gratefulness is an essential part of living a proper and fulfilling life. The old adage, if you see a turtle on a fence post, you know he didn't get there by himself. Right? Somebody helped him. And that should be true about everything in life. Nobody gets where they want to go all by themselves. I've known a few people who thought that was the case for them. It's just not the case. You can't do this by yourself. Somehow Nabal missed that lesson. Nabal apparently lacked this quality. What do we do with ungrateful people, and how do we respond to those who lack any sense of gratefulness? Here's the interesting thing. The Hebrew name Nabal is the word fool. Who would have guessed? Whereas Abigail, his wife, her name actually means discerning. How did these two people get together? I don't know. Nabal was a Calebite, but Caleb was no fool. Thus, it's in a real sense, Nabal was no Calebite, writes one commentator. Nabal reminds us of Saul, a great man in some respects, but someone who had done foolishly. 1 Samuel 13:13. And then in 1 Samuel 26, Saul admits to David that he acted foolishly again. Next chapter. Here's a precept. Anyone can act foolishly. Anybody can. It is the natural trait of children. If children are acting foolish, Solomon talks about it endlessly. Children just do foolish things. They're mindless about danger sometimes. They just do whatever, okay? Young men act foolishly and need instruction. Okay? You need to address it. But when a mature aged man acts foolishly, there is a real problem. Is this a pattern? Is this inside of their heart? And that's probably true of Nabal. David needed proper instruction, and God would provide it. How? So let's turn to verses 14 through 31. Verse 14. But one of the young men told Nabal's wife. So while these young men came with the story about wanting some victuals from Nabal's people during the big feast, one of the men who overheard what Nabal did said to Nabal's wife, "Hey, you're not going to believe what he just did, what your husband just did." This must have been an interesting little thing. On the side, she whispered to Abigail, "This is not good. Those people are going to tell David, and we're in serious trouble." So she starts preparing a response to what just happened with her husband behind the scenes. I think it's all hidden in those few verses right there. "Behold, David sent messengers out of the wilderness to greet our master, and he railed at them. Yet the men were very good to us, and we suffered no harm, and we did not miss anything when we were in the fields, as long as we were with them. They were a wall to us both by night and by day, all the while we were with them, keeping the sheep. Now, therefore, know this and consider what you should do, for harm is determined against our master and against all his house. And he is such a worthless man that one cannot speak to him." How many of you actually know the character of your boss? And have actually thought those words in the back of your mind? I'm sure that's happened a few times. Hasn't it happened to you? I've thought that to myself a few times in situations. I'm not sure this is wise. Then Abigail made haste and took 200 loaves and 2 skins of wine and 5 sheep already prepared and 5 seahs of parched grain and 100 clusters of raisins and 200 cakes of figs and laid them on donkeys. That's a lot of stuff. And she said to her young men, Go on before me. Behold, I come after you." But she did not tell her husband Nabal. I have no idea how she pulled this off. Must have been a pretty large feast area. And as she rode on the donkey and came down under cover of the mountains, behold, David and his men came down toward her, and she met them. Now David had said, "Surely in vain have I guarded all that this fellow has in the wilderness, so that nothing was missed of that all that belonged to him, and he has returned me evil for good. God do so to the enemies of David, and more also, if by mourning I leave so much as one male of all who belong to him." So David's on a murdering spree. He's going to kill everybody. Remember when this happened earlier in the book? Saul went to Nob, and Ahimelech was there, and what did Saul say? "I want all these people killed." And no one would volunteer because they were petrified at the idea. And Doeg the Edomite stepped up and said, I'll kill them all. And he killed all those 85 priests. This is David's idea at this particular moment as well. This is power out of control. He's not even in power. He's just going to kill a bunch of people. Just foolish. Foolish. Abigail is at the center of what comes next because only wisdom like this has the opportunity to lead and dispel such harsh decisions and foolish reactions. Let me read down to verse 31. When Abigail saw David, she hurried and got down from the donkey and fell before David on her face and bowed to the ground. Let's just stop there for a minute. Here's a piece of wisdom. Both of these men needed to learn a lesson. First, David, Israel's future king, and then Nabal. God would have to intercede for both of these men. He steps in both situations. Here's a comment that one commentator made, and I had to write it down because I thought it was so insightful. In verse 13, we read the Hebrew word for sword three times. David has revenge in his heart, and this in the face of his words to Goliath in 1 Samuel 17, verse 47. Listen to what David said. As a young man with a sling in his hand, ready to attack Goliath. And that all this assembly may know that the Lord saves not by sword and spear. For the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hand. He says those words to Goliath. And it's almost as if he's saying, you know what? Goliath's way too big of a problem for me. But this is not. I can manage. Just give me a sword. We'll take care of these crazy people. We'll fix it. So he goes off half-cocked, literally in a rage to kill all these people. Some thoughts on anger. First, anger is a primary emotion. It's happened to me many times. Okay? It resides in Nabal and David. It just manifests a little bit different. Okay? Nabal has not learned from this lesson, and David has to learn this lesson from a wise woman who knows both of these men. The person who teaches the lesson to both of them is Nabal's wife and David's future wife. Okay? Here's the second one. Ephesians 4, and I don't have any of this on your, do I? I think I do. The text uses two forms of the Greek word in Ephesians 4:26, and you should know this. Do not be angry and do not sin, it says in Ephesians 4:26. Do not let the sun go down on your anger. It's a pretty well-known verse. The first, and it uses the same Greek word, but two different tenses. The first one says, the word for anger says, be angry, but. That's what the word literally means. Be angry, but. Be really careful. Who's angry? God's angry at sin. He's really furious at sin. In the first phrase, don't rest on your anger. The second one says, don't rest on your anger or don't let an angry mood rest on you. That's the second word in that particular verse. So the first one says, be angry, but the second one says, don't let the mood of anger rest on you. And what's going on in these two guys? They're both angry. I can't believe he asked for this. And David's like, I can't believe you responded to me that way. I'm going to kill everybody. So they both have anger issues, all right? Yeah. Here's a third thing that goes. Anger has its place, but it should never have a permanent place in us. Hey, have you ever met an angry person? They're always angry about something. They never have any joy. I've talked to my brother 100,000 times on the phone over the years. And he goes, I'm not coming by you, Mark. I think you're just angry. And the scriptures tell me, don't be hanging around with angry people. He does that. He pulls the rug out from under me a few times, thinking he knows exactly what's going on. Proverbs 22, verse 24. and 25. Listen to what it says. Make no friendship with a man given to anger. There's no wiggle room in there. Nor go with a wrathful man, lest you learn his ways and entangle yourself in a snare. Okay. We read in verse 21, he has returned to me evil for good. And that sums up how David saw Nabal, and in his heart, he wants the man and all the males in his house dead. Do we ever have a right to hold someone accountable for something that somebody else has done? No? How about your boss? How about your spouse? How about your children? How about your greater family? No, every man stands condemned for his own choices. David may have had an issue with Nabal, but his heart towards all the males in his house was evil, and it needed to be stopped. Okay? Here's our next little topic, the value of wise counsel. All right? Most wise counsel comes in peaceful settings. It comes from seasoned saints, those who have lived a long obedience to Christ. I've met a few. It may be in the form of a book, a conversation with someone who knows something that applies in my situation, and God has providentially put them right in front of me. It's a gift. And David needs wise counsel, and God provides it. Two phrases from James chapter 1. If any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask God, who gives generously to all without reproach, and it will be given to him. And finally, verse 19, know this, my beloved brethren, let every person be quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to anger. On the other side of the issue, there's that, that phrase I just read to you. I am called to be quick to hear. David actually steps down off of his high horse in this particular moment. He's quick to hear, he's slow to speak, and he's slow to anger. His anger just puts on the brakes. Proverbs 4, verses 4 through 9. Let me read that text to you. It's important. Let your heart hold fast my words. It's really providential that Marlena read that text to us this morning, because chapter 3 and chapter 4 talk about how do I view wisdom. This is Solomon talking to his son. How do you view wisdom? I'll summarize it after I read the text to you. Let your heart hold fast my words, keep my commandments and live. Get wisdom, get insight. Do not forget and do not turn away from the words of my mouth. Do not forsake her and she will keep you. Love her and she will guard you. The beginning of wisdom is this, get wisdom and whatever you get insight. Prize her highly and she will exalt you. She will honor you and it will embrace her and you will embrace her. She will place on your head a graceful garland. She will bestow on you a beautiful crown. This is how I translate those two chapters in the text. Men, like you pursue women, just pursue wisdom to set with the same passion. Chase it. Run it down. Don't give up. She's the one for you. That's literally what Solomon's telling his son. Just chase wisdom. And we're going to see what David does with the wisdom in front of him. Chase wisdom the way your flesh sometimes chases the woman. Literally. You could just summarize those two chapters with those words. Okay? The next one, godly influence, verses 32 through 35. Let's read that text. And David said to Abigail, blessed be the Lord, the God of Israel, who sent you this day to meet me. Blessed be your discretion and blessed be you. You have kept me this day from blood guilt and from working salvation with my own hand. As surely as the Lord, the God of Israel, lives, who has restrained me from hurting you, unless you have hurried and come to meet me, truly by morning, there had not been left of Nabal so much as one male. Then David received from her hand what she had brought him, and said to her, go in peace to your house. See, I have obeyed your voice, and I have granted your petition. Here's how I see that, what she said. Seeing the big picture is a large part of retreating from anger and rage. When people are really mad, they get really focused on one single event. I can testify to that. You literally just laser in on one thing to really get you upset about something. And how do we come down off that? We step back and see the big picture. And she speaks to that issue in her what she says to David. She does. It was a mark of Abigail's actions and the words, and it blessed David. When I am angry, I have a bad habit of only seeing what is before me, and I need to stop and find and focus on a big picture. And when we do, we go, this is a bad idea. And back away from it. And it takes skill, it takes effort, it takes time. Let's finish reading verses 36-38. And Abigail came to Nabal, and behold, he was holding a feast in his house, like the feast of a king. And Nabal's heart was merry within him, for he was very drunk. So she told him nothing at all until the morning. In the morning, when the wine had gone out of Nabal, his wife told him all these things, and his heart died within him, and he became as a stone. And about 10 days later, the Lord struck Nabal, and he died. This is the providential hand of God. Remember I mentioned a couple weeks ago about this hand issue? What do I do with my hand? Is it under control? A controlled and measured hand, unlike David's, which was harsh and out of control. Then the final bit of the text is a little strange. Okay, let's read it. Verse 39. When David heard that Nabal was dead, he said, "Blessed be the Lord who has avenged the insult I received at the hand of Nabal and has kept back his servant from wrongdoing. The Lord has returned the evil of Nabal on his own head." Then David sentenced and spoke to Abigail to take her as his wife. That was a quick decision, if it all happened in that verse. When the servants of David came to Abigail at Carmel, they said to her, "David has sent us to you to take you to him as his wife." And she rose and bowed with her face to the ground and said, "Behold, your handmaid is a servant to wash the feet of the servants of my Lord." And Abigail hurried and rose and mounted a donkey, and her five young women attended her. She followed the messengers of David and became his wife. David also took Ahinoam of Jezreel, and both of them became his wives. Saul had given Michal, his daughter, David's wife, to Paltry, the son of Lachish, who was of Galim. Here's a text. I want to read this to you. This is important. It says in there that the king of Israel has to have seven things that are part of his life. It lists in there. First, he was to be a chosen man by God. Okay? Saul was chosen by God. So was David. Chosen by God. That's first. Second, he must be a Hebrew, not a foreigner. Both of these guys are Hebrews. They weren't foreigners. Third, he is not to multiply his horses to create a large military for himself. It's hard to tell if that's true in the story. Fourth, he is not to take many wives, for they will pull his heart away from God. Now, it just says many wives. I'm thinking, okay, did you just mean one right there? Because David's son gets 700 wives and 300 concubines. David ends up with, wait for it, 8 wives. Is that too many? Feels like it to me. Fifth, he is not to create for himself great wealth. Sixth, he must possess a personal copy of God's law, study it, and obey it. When someone became king, he commissioned the printing of the law of God so he would read it, study it, and obey it. And finally, the seventh, he must be a humble man, not seeing himself greater than his own countrymen. And I don't know what to do with this particular part of the text right here. Is having two wives and how he got them, I don't have any idea. It turns out that Saul only had one wife, had the exact same name as the second gal, Ahinoam. And he has 7 kids by her. Jonathan, his oldest son, was David's best friend. let me draw some conclusions, all right? So we can be finished here. David manifested a teachable spirit. Even in rage, he had a teachable spirit. And she presented her case. She brought all these gifts. Okay, that problem's resolved. Stop being anxious about all that. And then he listened to her, what she had to say. He's a teachable man. When Saul was offended in 1 Samuel 21, he looked for a man who would kill all the men associated with that priest, and Doeg the Edomite stepped up. That would not be the response of David to the offense of Nabal. By the Lord, Abigail stood in his way. I like this lady. I have no idea what she was like beyond this particular story right here. I don't hear a thing else in Scripture about her. But she, at this particular moment, she manifests really, really wise counsel. And her advice was important to David. He recognized it immediately. Abigail stood in his way. And think about this. Could a guy with a flaming sword have stood in David's way? Probably not. God has this way of just presenting what stands in our way just at the right time with wisdom. A woman who thoughtfully said, you should think about this before you do this. Okay, here's the next one. Abigail's words to David are the longest speech by a woman in the Old Testament. Go figure. In it, she interceded for her husband and his servants. She prophetically reveals David's destiny as the man who would begin the dynasty of kings in Israel. And third, she prevented David from judgment for his intended murder, an act of disobedience described in the Torah. She did those three things in this long speech. And it's not really that long. She gets to the point pretty quick. Abigail's appeal to David is essentially the long-term view in the face of hasty actions. This is always a wise place to stop before any decision. Part of her long-term view is caring for one's conscience and a reminder that delayed gratification is a part of healthy life. Okay, let me summarize by talking about just one thing. One final observation from Abigail's speech. In it, she used the Hebrew term translated "my Lord" 14 times. This is the word Adonai. She used it 14 times in this little speech. She's talking to David, who is the future king of Israel, and it has a double meaning in this context: my master or my husband. This wise woman first honored her husband, and God rewarded her for her wisdom and discernment. She demonstrated a clear understanding of authority, and that was one foundation for all of her wisdom. A clear understanding of authority. She didn't try to bully this man or push him. She understood her position, and God used her wisdom to change his heart and rescue him from certain stupidity. Chapter 26 is a repeat of last week. We'll get to it next week. Let's pray. Father, I'm blessed. I live most of my life, and I can't even think of someone who returned evil for my good. But this story reminds me that there are some people, and they wouldn't have any trouble at all returning evil for good. From your people, from total strangers, because their hearts are wicked, I don't know. I trust, Lord, that none of us fit in that category. David's a good example to us. Things can stir us up at any given moment, and we just fly off the handle. Get really anxious I pray, Lord, that you'll minister grace to us right now. And if this is an issue in our lives, if we're in need of wise counsel, if we just spurn wise counsel, if we're in need of some anger management, stuff like that, I pray that we'll be honest with ourselves and face it down and find solutions, depend upon you, find wise counsel, and live for your glory. Lord, there's not a thing that's in my life that you can't defeat. I pray that you never give up on what needs to be defeated so we can be used by you like you used David. We pray in your name. Amen.